Good morning, Ithaca, Watkins Glen. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest, Donna Daniels. Donna, it's good to have you with us this morning.
It's a pleasure being here.
Now, I think you may need to speak just a little bit louder if you can. I know it's hard. We are pre-recording this show from Hospicare because Pastor Donna Daniels wanted to speak, and this is where she was.
Yes. I wanted to share the good news about the facility and the acceptance of us, I guess, getting to the point where we have to say goodbye and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Time to go.
Right, so
we don't know exactly when, but it's getting time to go.
Right. So I want to back up from that just a little bit.
Okay.
And ask you the question that I begin every show with.
Okay.
And that is, who are you?
What do you mean?
Who are you? That's exactly the question. Who are you? What labels do you wear? What qualities have you aspired to have in your life? Who are you? So we can start this conversation.
I figure I'm a pastor of the Lord to open the door for people to come in, see that there's no judgment, free them up. That's my message I want to give mostly.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't want to bind them out. I want to exclude them, not include. What do they call
it? You want to include them and not exclude them.
Yes.
Yes. Sometimes we say almost the opposite of what we mean.
Yes. And that's what I want to do.
Uh-huh. Where are you from?
The Bronx.
Uh-huh.
Is that where it is?
Well, and I think you were born in Queens?
Yes, Astoria, Long Island.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about the story of your early life.
I was born in Astoria, Long Island, Steinway Street. Big part of my life there in a way. It sounds short, but it was the start of my life.
And what was important about starting your life there?
What's important about starting my life there? My life starting there gave me a beginning to where I was on my way to go without knowing it.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we have directions showing us the way. We don't necessarily recognize them all in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. What did you think was happening in the beginning? And what was actually happening? What did you think was happening?
Okay, I felt that God was showing me the trip I was going to take, you know, in life, where I was going, the walk I was going to be on, and the purpose, I guess, eventually of getting there, you know.
Right.
And that eventually this would be part of the walk for helping others, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. But were you always aware of that?
Yeah, I always have this desire to help people. To have them give the opportunity to make God as their choice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, very big deal to me. And not everybody gives somebody that opportunity. They're too busy laying down rules. You know, like Jesus loves you. Now you come to him. He's a rule list. And I'm like, what's wrong with this picture, you know?
Uh-huh. So what is wrong with that picture?
So that's what you get in a lot of churches, and I never did understand that. And I wanted to have churches be aware that they can eliminate that.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the way it's supposed to be. God says you come to Jesus. He doesn't say with a list.
Right.
Of rules and regulations, thank God. Praise the Lord, we'd all be in trouble.
Right. So what do you have when you don't have a list?
What do you have when you don't have a list? You have freedom of choice, and you have freedom of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the freedom of God's love. That awaits you.
That what? That
That's
awaits
awaiting you.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And
waiting to give to everybody, really. He loves us so much, that's why he died on the cross.
Right. When you say that we have freedom of choice and freedom of love, what are there sometimes when we choose well and sometimes when we don't choose well?
Oh, absolutely. We intend to choose naturally the complete and total freedom. But we are critical of ourselves as well. And that's what we have to make sure we back off and, you know, don't include that in our lives. We don't have to have the criticism behind it.
Right. So, how do we choose if, I understand that you were saying that we need to soften and dampen the harsh judgmental criticism that gets kind of, in a sense, in God's place.
Yes.
But how do we make judgments or assessments that help us make good choices?
Okay. Instead of deciding the answers, example, someone came in and they decided they should shut off my TV. They didn't ask, they just shut it off. And sometimes we do that in life with other questions. So God said, you know, they're asking a question about God, and we don't realize we've just turned that channel off.
Uh-huh.
You know, we really do. We turn the channel off and we didn't answer them the way they anticipated or anything. Just no answer.
So rather than lead with a stop or with a judgment to not do something, you would
or an answer.
Or with an answer.
That's what it is.
Or with an answer, you would lead with a question.
Yes.
Why are you doing that? Or why are you watching that TV show?
Correct.
How did you learn that? How did you learn to do that?
Actually, through the facility, I've learned a lot about that. I noticed different things. You know, I noticed that they automatically assume you want the TV off. They don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to be unhelpful. It's quite the opposite. It's to be helpful.
Right.
And a lot of times in people's lives, we do that. We decide what's best for them, you know. We decide what's a good idea for them.
So I'm gonna back up here and say, if I respect your freedom, but I'm troubled by something I see you do,
uh-huh.
rather than tell you not to do it, I should ask you, well, why are you doing that? What purpose does that serve?
Correct.
And that takes it out of judgment and keeps it in freedom.
Yes, it absolutely does. It takes it out of judgment and keeps it in freedom. And keeps it out there where people have the ability to answer that question and make a choice, you know?
Yeah.
It's always a choice.
Yep. Yep.
And Jesus tells us that plainly.
So I hear you say very clearly that it's always a choice, but many of us feel like we don't have choices or we don't have the choices we'd like to have. How do we get past that?
Well, we get past the fact that when they name certain sins and different things like that, judging ourselves. We got to stop judging ourselves. God is the judge, not us.
So what kind of a relationship do you have with yourself when you're not judging in that kind of harsh under your thumb sense? What kind of how would you describe the relationship?
Well, I feel I would be open to God in God's will and way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other way, I feel like I'm closed.
Mm-hmm.
I've made a decision that maybe God has no part of whatsoever.
Right, because you've judged yourself
uh-huh.
and taken God's place in a certain
yes.
sense. Now, I'm going to put a word in here just because you're not using it, but I think it's you're not using it because you assume it, and most people don't know it.
Okay.
But when you don't judge yourself, kind of under your thumb, taking God's place, like we talked about,
mm-hmm.
you're curious about yourself. You can surprise yourself, and you can horrify yourself when you don't judge yourself.
That's true. Yeah, you might not like the answer.
You might not like the answer, but if you don't like the answer, you're free to choose to change.
Yes, you're right.
But that change is a result of your curiosity rather than your judgment.
That's true. I didn't think of it that way. Very
well,
good.
Well, but you lined it out that way. I'm just giving you back.
Yeah, I know. That's very good.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's the way it should be.
You have just given, in the space of less than 10 minutes, one of the basic explanations of the Gospels in a way that is deeply devout, but not fundamentalist. Does that make sense?
What does fundamentalist mean now?
It's not rigid. It's not judgmental. You've given a very, very strong case for the gospel, evangelical witnessing to your experience of God.
Yes.
Without being judgmental.
Right.
That's powerful. That's powerful. You asked that you came with some music, you asked me to find some music. So what I've done is I have found Mahalia Jackson's His Eye is on the Sparrow. Do you want to say something about that song before I play it, or do you want me to play it first and then you'll talk about it?
I'll say something. His Eye is on the Sparrow reminds us how much he loves us, that he loves us so much, his eye is on each and every single one of us to a personal extent beyond measure. His love is so great. His mercy is so awesome. His grace so available.
Why should I feel discouraged? In why should the why should my heart feel lonely and long for heaven and home? When Jesus is my portion and my cornerstone friend is he, God is watching over you and me. I sing because my soul is a happy. I sing because imagine over you and me.
You know, it's just blessings. Mm-hmm. Behold.
Mm-hmm.
The cup runneth over.
Now,
when we allow him to activate that in our lives. And allow us to answer those questions and be there for him and, you know, be honest with him, as honest as we should be.
Yeah.
I think one-on-one we are very honest with God.
Right. Well, yeah, and in a certain sense, depending upon, and what I want to ask you as we explore what this means a little bit, is it's depending upon how you understand God, there's no way to not be honest, because God has already thoroughly examined and known everything, because we are part of God.
Right.
And we are fully known. That's one point of view.
True.
And when you were saying God's eye is on each of us, it's not like God were some funny guy in the ceiling or in the
right. Somebody separated.
Right. It's like God is in everything, so we are observed just by being.
Yes. He created us.
From your point of, yeah.
He created us, and he's. Watching over us, one by one.
Yeah. This is a very hard concept sometimes for people who want to, for both theists and atheists.
Yes, it
is. Because they want to personify God or locate God in some place as though God were separate from reality.
Right.
Whereas I think your perspective, God is reality, and we're just a little piece of it.
Yes.
And we're seen by it in all times and places, if I understand what you're saying.
Yes. And the thing is that it's sad that most people do not have the opportunity to realize how available God is to each and every one of us, atheists and all.
Mm-hmm.
And that they loves us.
How did
as
God?
We are.
Yeah. Okay, how did God become available to you?
Available to me.
How did you experience God present to you, available to you? When did that happen?
Oh, many times. When I was a little kid, I was in the hospital, and I had a rare lung disease, and this little nurse with the dark curly hair used to bring me prayer books. And she used to tell me to pray. And she used to read them to me, the little golden prayer books. And I used to listen to them all the time. And then as I grew, I wound up with some sort of a ministry picking me up for Sundays, visiting in a church. And there they, I guess, probably worked on the personal relationship of being born again. I don't know. Too many years ago, and can't remember.
Yeah, but through her giving you something to read and spending time with you,
that's what
you
that
experienced
did.
The presence of God.
Yes, definitely.
And now, not now, but as you got older, how did that presence change? Were there different places or different people or different situations where you felt it stronger?
It got better. As we went on our way, it just improved. He was there more and more and more. And more seeable and more. How would you say it? Noticeable, more dependable, more visual, you know.
You experienced his presence with all your senses.
Yes, all the senses. I just prayed that everybody else could, and That's my difficult task. My mind is trying to let everybody see that they have this opportunity to know God in the same way. You know, that there is a God.
Right, right.
Because
So as you have gotten to know, God, and you have experienced God, one of the things, and you want people to know the kind of thing that you have experienced, how has it made a difference in your life?
Oh, it changed my whole life. Gave me a life to live.
So what you gave you a life to live, what do you mean by that?
Well, without it, there was no living, it was existing. With it, there's living.
Okay. When you were existing, what did your days feel like?
I don't know. I didn't really have too many existing days. I was blessed enough to be included into the living really quick. The good Lord did that. It's kind of like I was a miracle. Even when I was conceived, I was a miracle. I was conceived, they don't know how I got in or how I got out, but I technically had no way physically of being born again, and, you know, being born, period.
Right.
A natural gnome, and yet I was. So God was prepared for me.
So your birth was something of a miracle?
Yes, it was a miracle.
And how did that affect your parents?
That affected them a lot. Matter of fact, my father turned totally against God, ironically enough.
He didn't want children or didn't know what to do with the child?
No. He just couldn't accept the fact that God wanted me like that and allowed what to happen because he lost his daughter in between us. I had a older sister and a younger sister, me.
Oh, I see.
And then we had a sister in the middle that died.
I see.
And he was very angry with God over taking his daughter away.
His precious daughter.
Yes, and he couldn't understand why that daughter wasn't as of the same value as this daughter.
And why she had to die.
And why she had to go home and be with him, yes.
And he couldn't take you as a blessed gift in her place.
Right. Especially under the circumstances that I was really ready to go with him, and then he left me and took her instead. I think that really confused him.
Uh-huh. Because you had such a close relationship with God, and he took the other one.
Yeah, and plus he also, he had a bad experience pastoral-wise with a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very strict pastor that said, you know, this is this and that's that. And there's no in between. And you're either going to heaven or hell. And he was pretty stern, that pastor, the way I understand it. And my father just couldn't handle him.
How old was your sister when she died? Did she die
seven.
Before you? And were you born before she died?
Five.
You were five when she died. How did she die?
Kidneys and a whole bunch of stuff.
Failure. Mm. Her body failed her.
Yeah, all the way down the line, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was very, very sick. Mm. There was just no way.
Right. It's not uncommon for parents to be very angry with God in the death of a child and to never give up that anger.
Yeah.
Ever. I even have a friend who's a pastor whose daughter died at 18, a week before she was supposed to go to college, from an unknown heart defect.
Oh.
And she, even though she is a person of great faith, she is still angry at God that that young woman died. Even though, because it just felt...
She couldn't understand it.
Couldn't accept it. There is no understanding.
That's true.
Those are not things for our understanding. We can technically understand biologically what happened, maybe. But beyond that, there's not much understanding.
True enough.
One of the questions, when you want people to know God's acceptance and love, and this gets a little bit to your father's experience, how do you, many, many people are deeply, deeply disappointed in God or deeply hurt by God, or that's the way that they experience God.
Yes.
Have you ever been deeply hurt and had to get over that yourself?
Well, if I was hurt, I didn't hang on to it. I kind of like, what happened, happened. You know, what is, and moved on.
And do you have any clue about how you were able to cultivate that attitude of letting be what is and moving on? How did you learn to do that?
Letting God be God? That's a tough move. Most people have a problem with that. Letting God be God. And walking with Him, you know?
Right.
It just is. It's a tough walk.
Right. The language of faith is to let God be God.
Right.
But the language that speaks to the person who's hurting or who is in doubt is let be what is and see what you can do with it.
Yeah, well, see, the problem is my older son says, I don't know what I'd do without God. Now, there's some people that take that attitude, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some that take the other attitude, I don't know what I'm going to do with God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's got a lot of sides to the coin.
Yes.
So it's a matter of, you know, I don't know, I've always had it in my head that if I look to put people up and I look to bring people to the Lord and I look to bring that love and that joy and that life that I believe with all my heart,
mm-hmm.
that God wants to give each and every one of us, then I have to be positive, no matter how negative I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a battle.
Right.
There's times I do not feel as positive as I play.
Right. And in order for you to be accepted as both honest and real, tell me a little bit about the negativity. And describing it isn't blessing it, it's just describing it.
I don't know. Just admitting that it's there to begin with. And that the circumstance does happen, is there. Not only for me, but for everybody else. That we all have to make choices, and that's where choice comes in. And that's the one thing I love about God, is we always have a choice. And He emphasizes that so great, you cannot take away the choice of a person.
Right.
That's the one rule. He will not let you take away any choice of anyone. They all must be free to love Him, free to choose, and free in that direction.
I'm going to tell a little story which is not the usual interpretation, but the story behind the turn the other cheek passage.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus said, turn the other cheek, He didn't say, suck it up, which is how that's often
taken.
When you read the passage, the person who was being struck on the right cheek, which it says in one of the Gospels, the right cheek, mm-hmm. would have been a slave or a woman or a child being hit on the right cheek with the back of the left hand. And so when he said to turn the other cheek, they couldn't strike them on the right cheek again with the back of the hand with that super, super insult.
Oh, okay.
Had you know, when you see somebody strike you with the back of the hand, that's a real insulting way to hit. And in the book that was written by the Jewish scholars at the same time Jesus lived, that insult would cost you a year's wages if you did it to another free Jew, a free Jewish man.
Oh.
But if you did it to a slave or a child or a woman, they couldn't collect damages. They weren't equal to you. But when you turn the other cheek, they couldn't strike you on the right cheek again. They had to hit you with an open hand or a fist if they were going to hit you, and that was less insulting.
So you focus a lot on the reality of the hit.
Yeah, and that's... And
I never did.
And the thing is, but in the reality is the choice. Because many people, when they are struck, the immediate sense is to either retaliate or to cower. If you retaliate, you're no better than what started it. If you cower, you dehumanize yourself. But when you turn the other cheek, you say, I will not let you insult me to the degree that you just insulted me. I will not participate in my own humiliation.
And I don't feel it's an insult at all. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I never thought of it in that direction whatsoever.
Right, right. But what I'm trying to get at is some of the way in which a person can deal with the negativity.
Right.
Without fighting back, without retaliating, and also without completely falling apart. It sounds like you have in your life, even if you've never used that story that way, have found a way to come back with your dignity, or try.
Well, if not my own, for somebody else.
If not for your own, for somebody else?
Because their dignity is more valuable than even my own. Because that's why we're here. See, when God said we're to give birth and have children and have helpmates, I think of it more than just helpmates, you know, sleep with us. I think of it as helping each other. And that's what life is about. We're supposed to be here for one another. So by being here for one another, then we are including all that other stuff.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
I'm gonna suggest that we, you know, I met you through your son Rick. And Rick is going to read, I'm going to suggest that he reads the chapter from Corinthians that you wanted to share.
Okay.
Chapter 13.
Oh, I love.
If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror, dimly. But then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, and then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now, faith, hope, and love abide. These three, and the greatest of these is love.
Yes. That's so true. We gotta love enough above ourselves.
When you struggle, is the struggle to become back into that awareness of love, to let go of negativity?
Well, it certainly was today.
Yeah.
I'd like to say it isn't part of my life anymore, but it certainly was today.
Why?
Well, today I got down in the dumps, you know, and I was not happy with campers, so.
What were you not happy about?
I was down in the dumps, you know. And it just seemed the day was not doing well.
Was it the day or the prognosis that has you here in the hospice, in hospice care?
I don't understand.
Was it a bad day, just for the day, or was it a realization of a process that you may not be happy with today, that the dying is not as, maybe not what you thought it was going to be today?
Well, that could be. I don't know. I never thought about it, to be honest with you. I think of it as a journey we're on. And I'm on some sort of a journey now. Matter of fact, it doesn't seem very realistic, if you must know. It almost seems intangible, you know, untouchable. It's not really happening, even though it is happening.
Right, right.
It's hard for me to believe it's happening. So, evidently it's happening.
Right, right. So, and it's hard to believe that this is what dying is like?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how is the dying different than you thought it would be?
I don't know. I guess I thought you'd just go to sleep and wake up one day and you weren't going to be here. I didn't think there'd be any trips or, you know, adventures or whatever you want to call them.
And what are the adventures that you're going through?
Experiencing other people's needs and ways in the facility. We have a lot of people here working.
Right.
And I watch all their different personalities. It's quite fascinating to see their different goals and their different hearts. You know, in the direction they're working in and stuff. And they, I mean, it's a job you got to really care, otherwise you can't have.
Right, so...
it's a tough job.
What I hear you saying is that as you are dying, you are even more aware of their struggle to work and live and to be here to take care of you and other people.
Yes.
Who are dying.
Exactly. And that's got to be tough.
So,
very tough.
So you didn't think, as you were dying, you hadn't thought about how you would experience the people who were around you caring for you?
I didn't think in any direction.
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared for anything. I didn't know what was going to be. I didn't know you'd take a trip like this. You know, I had no idea it existed.
Right, right. And I think your experience is probably in some ways more common than not, because we don't... Have you ever walked with somebody alongside them as they were dying until they died?
No. Not really.
Not really?
Mm-mm.
And I would say that's probably true of most Americans. We aren't walking with our loved ones so closely while they die. We haven't so much.
They seem to put them away.
Well, and that I think was probably more common even 20 or 30 years ago than it is now, True. Where we take the relationship closer.
True.
Where we stay closer, and Rick is staying very close to you, or trying,
mm-hmm.
and as much as he can. What I wonder is, did you not imagine that there would be a new cast of characters around you as you're kind of in your final act?
Yeah, I had no idea this existed whatsoever in any uh-huh. shape or form.
And how has it been better than you thought it would be? How has this difference been better than you might have imagined, and how has it been harder than you might have imagined?
Better in a sense, because it's not real, silly as it sounds. And what was the other question?
And how is it not real? I mean, what do you mean by that?
Not real. Doesn't seem realistic to envision that I'm going to be going home with the Lord. Under the circumstance to how I'm feeling physically now.
Right.
In my eyes. I'm not saying I'm doing well. I have no idea how I'm doing physically, you know.
Right.
Doctor-wise. But,
you know what they tell you, but inside you have a different feel.
Well, I don't. They haven't really said anything,
okay.
So.
Yeah.
I really don't know where I stand in that direction. I'm perfectly honest with you.
But this wasn't how you thought you would be as you prepared to meet the Lord.
No, I have no idea. I wasn't prepared to meet the Lord in any way, shape, or form in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I never thought of hospice, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So are you anticipating being surprised, disappointed, or just clueless about what that means to die?
Can't answer until I get there, and when
right.
I get there, you won't hear it.
That's right. That's right. You seem to have tenacity and trust.
It's tenacity.
You got a good bit of fight in you. Not fight in a negative sense, but you got strength. You got some spine, some backbone, and you're gonna follow this as long as you can, even if it takes you places you didn't think you were gonna go. I mean, that's what
true.
They say in the Bible. You know, when you get old, they lead you around to places you would not go. Whereas when
yeah,
you were young, you went where you want to go.
That's true. That's very
and,
true.
And that's what's happened here.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely leads me to places I never thought I'd be.
Yeah.
Period. It's quite incredible. Of course, the family's with me, and that's my greatest concern, because I want to make sure that I make their trip the best it can be, too, for them.
Right.
Under the circumstance, you know, what I got to give, you know, whatever little it may be, or however
right.
great it may be.
Right. What I hear is that you want them to know the role of God's love in their lives as it has been for you.
Yes. Like I said, if I had my way, I'd give everybody that love I have for God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my love is as great as I know it to be, and I just wish I could give the love I have at least that much
mm-hmm.
to all others.
Yeah.
So that they can, you know, have time with God like I have.
I'm going to make a kind of funny connection here. I'm going to play a song that you brought with you called The Auctioneer now. And we're just going to listen to that, and then I want to hear you talk a little bit about why you picked it. But let's listen to it first.
Okay.
Hey, well, all right, sir, here we go there, and what are they going to give for them? I've been $600 down here now, 10 and now, 25 and now, 35 and now, 50 now, 60, will you give me 60 now, 75, 75, another $85 on the bottom there. There was a boy in Arkansas who wouldn't listen to his ma when she told him he should go to school. He'd sneak away in the afternoon, take a little walk, then pretty soon you'd find him at the local auction barn. He'd stand and listen carefully, then pretty soon he began to see how the auctioneer could talk so rapidly. He said, oh my, it's do or die, I've got to learn that auction cry, gotta make my mark and be an auctioneer. $25 bid, and now $30, 30, will you give me 30, make it 30 bid, upon my $30, will you give me 30, who'd bid a $30 bid? $30 bid, and now $35, will you give me 35, to make it 35, to bid a 35, who would have bid it at a $35 bid? As time went on, he did his best, and all could see he didn't jest, he practiced calling bids both night and day. His pap would find him behind the barn just working up an awful storm as he tried to imitate the auctioneer. Then his pap said, son, we just can't stand to have a mediocre man selling things at auction using our good name. I'll send you off to auction school, then you'll be nobody's fool. You can take your place among the best. $35 bid, another $40, 40, will they give me 40, make it 40, bid it all, $40, don't we live 40, who'd bid a $40 bid? $40 bid, and now $45, will you give me $45 to make it a $45 to bid it a $45? Who would have bid it at a $45 bid? So from that boy who went to school, there grew a man who played it cool. He came back home a full-fledged auctioneer. Then the people came from miles around just to hear him make that rhythmic sound. It filled their hearts with such a happy cheer. His fame spread out from shore to shore, he had all he could do and more, had to buy a plane to get around. Now he's the tops in all the land, let Paul give that man a hand, he's the best of all the auctioneers. $45 bid, and I'll bid it, dollar 50, will you give me 50, make it 50, bid it all, $50, will you give me 50, hooray, bid a $50 bid. $50 bid, and now 55, will you give me 55, make it a 55, bid a 55, I sold that hawk for the $50 bill. Hey, well, all right, sir, open the gate and let them out and walk them, boys. Here we come, a lot number 29 in. What are they going to give for them? I'm a 25, I'll get 35, another 50, make it 50, bit of wrong, 59, 60, will they give me 69, 75, and 85, and 95, 100, and 25, and 50, 75, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 5, and 6, and 7, and 800 in the mind there.
And that's the auctioneer song.
Yes.
Why did you, what appeals to you about that song?
Value of life. You look at my life in one way, and I look at my life in another.
Uh-huh.
And I look at your life in one way, and you, and your life in another, you know?
Yeah.
And that auctioneer expresses it. You know, sometimes we see rich instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it's just an everyday instrument like anybody else's.
Right.
Nobody's instrument is better than anybody else's.
Right.
And that's what I like about that song.
The boy who didn't go to school when he was supposed to ended up becoming an auctioneer.
Well, you see it in that angle. Yeah, I see it on the other angle.
Yeah. With what he's auctioning.
Yeah, the value of what he's auctioning.
Yeah.
I see it as actual value of a person.
Right. He claimed his value.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he didn't do what his mom thought he ought to do. Right?
No. Yeah, true.
Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah.
What is the value that you've had to claim that your parents or your children wouldn't necessarily recognize?
No. I think they know me pretty well.
Uh-huh.
To be honest with you, they know me all the way around. And the auctioneer is just a demonstration of how well they know me. That my purpose in this whole thing we're doing is to show the value of another person.
Right. And the love of God for the whole world is what,
oh,
you,
yes,
what you started with.
That's what I want to give them. If I could, I'd give them all that love, a touch of that love, every last one of them.
You'd give them the whole universe through that love, if you could.
Yeah, I just want them to know God's love.
Mm-hmm. Are you worried that they won't?
Well, I know some refuse, and that breaks my heart. To know that some will refuse. Hard for me to understand why, but then naturally, it would be.
Right. You brought another scripture, and I'm going to ask Rick to read it. And when Rick, in a selection from it, or I can, which do you prefer? And I'm going to ask you to tell me what you want us to take away from that scripture. Okay?
Take away?
Yeah. After. What do you want us to learn from that scripture?
Oh. Okay.
So this is the Lazarus story from the Gospel of John.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. There was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone."
I could use a pain pill, please.
Okay.
Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me."
Yes.
When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with the strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."
Yes.
We're going to get you a pain pill shortly here.
Yeah, I need one.
Yeah.
Desperately.
Did you expect to be able to die at your son's house?
Actually, yeah.
So was this a disappointment to come here?
No, I understood that too.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like Catch-22, you know?
Right. You couldn't
really
stay there, and you couldn't...
Reality,
it really
yeah.
wasn't positive to come here. It right. wasn't working there. It's not ideal here.
You can only do so much, you know?
Right.
So I had to do what they had to do.
Right. What do we take away from the Lazarus story?
Lazarus?
Yeah. The one that Rick just read.
Well, that has to do with the fact that people, you know, say you stink, you know?
Right.
How many people you hear in life? There was this one woman I walked in church with, and, you know, she smoked cigarettes, so on and so forth, and she wanted to get to know the Lord, and she just lost her son and everything. And this woman in my church says, "Boy, she stinks." And I thought, how horrible to say that about this woman. You know, she come in to be ministered to for her son that just passed away.
Right.
And you're talking about her. She stinks, you know, because
mm-hmm.
she smokes. You know, that's not, you know, let's have a little mercy here.
Right.
A little understanding. But the help worked around it and worked with it and brought it to the reality of truth, you know, where they understood that that's what that woman needed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where she is today or what she was doing, but she was okay when she was with me for a while there. I just hope she doesn't lose God's love because of ignorant people because they were always throwing sin her way, you know, bashing her with the rocks.
Right, right, right.
That right. really upsets my apple cart.
Right.
I hate to see people doing that to people.
Right. So I'm hearing two things here. I'm hearing that for you the Lazarus story is how we give people up for dead who aren't, who are just hurting.
Yes.
And they stink sometimes. And but I also, when you mentioned the story before we started the interview, the last line about, you know, unbind him and set him free, let him go, is that, that's a second reading, and is that what you're looking forward to?
What do you mean looking forward to?
When you meet the Lord, will you be set free?
Oh, I'm already set free.
You're already set free.
Yeah, no, I'm set free. It's just a matter of, I want the people set free so they can get to them.
Oh.
I'm more interested in the people that are here getting to them.
Right, right. And the people who are the living dead, as it were.
Yeah. Like also the help here.
I see, yeah.
You know, these people work with these people. But do they really see the message that God's given them through these people?
Mm-hmm.
The love, the compassion, the mercy, the grace,
mm-hmm.
the healings. And that's what he's given them through this ministry. It's a great ministry. But it's a tough one.
Right.
And it's hard work.
Right.
And it's emotionally straining, you know, on these people. Mm-hmm. And boy, they give from their heart.
Right.
Every last one of them.
And how is it that you, in your own way, give to them?
I try to keep an up attitude. You know?
Yeah.
A blessed attitude, an appreciative attitude, a thank you attitude, a, you know, proper attitude, not this other nonsense, you know, where you're criticizing all the time.
So. Right.
No, I'm not here for what I can get. I'm here for what I can give as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're giving to me, and I want to give to them as much.
Right. Right.
So it's a two-way street. We're both giving.
Right, and that happens all the way right down to and past the very end.
Yes, and that's the beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
Donna, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Pray I have blessed somebody's lives.
Yeah. We're going to play a Celtic woman version of Amazing Grace.
Okay.
And do you want to say anything about that before we play it?
It's just that's true. God's grace is truly amazing. His healings are truly magnificent. They're truly beyond our understanding. You know, like we have no idea what to expect.
Right.
He's above and beyond. It's incredible. Our God's an awesome God. And that's the truth.
Pastor Donna Daniels, it's been a privilege.
It's been a privilege for me to share with you.
Grace that